Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Today on the program, the past 5 days in about, what, 4.5 minutes or so, $36 worth of food stamps and millions to be made in the toy market. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday. It's the 1st of November. Good as always to have you with us. And we are going to get right to it. The week that was in the life of the American economy. For our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond, we've got Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine and Sudeep Reddy from the Wall Street Journal. They are both in our New York studios. Hey, guys.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So I will confess that as we were sitting around this morning talking about what I was going to talk about with you guys today, somebody had to remind me that there was a Fed meeting this week. Sudeep, what are they doing down there? Are they just biding their time until Janet Yellen comes in, assuming she gets confirmed?
You could have missed that Fed meeting very easily.
Know.
The Fed met and said almost nothing after that. The big problem right now is the Fed doesn't really know its next move. That's a little bit scary that the Fed is trying to watch the economy, understand what's happened after all this turmoil of the government shutdown, the debt ceiling fight, really, really painfully slow improvement in the labor market. We've never been in this kind of situation, and we don't really know what the exit looks like. And to have to watch this in real time is a pretty ugly situation because you never know whether everything's going to fall apart or whether we'll just come out of it just fine in a few months.
Oh, good. Lee, what – and this, I guess, is the $64,000 question. What are they looking for? Are they looking for – unemployment to come down, inflation to go up? I mean, how are we going to know when they're going to know?
I mean, that's the question. I think that employment is the biggest factor on everyone's mind, the Fed included. And I think, you know, last month we saw so-so numbers. We are in recovery, but it's so incredibly slow. It's almost hard to see. And they're just not comfortable yet that we're at a place where they can start to pull back. And so nobody knows when that point will come. You know, I mean, it's just creeping along here. And I think, you know, everything was muddied by the shutdown. And I think the safest, you know, they just took the safest option, which was nothing.
Sudeep, do me a favor, and I guess this is what we're going to call a free response question. Find me the bright spot, the positive aspect of the American economy right now, you know, 6 weeks before Christmas.
The positive aspect is that
take all the time you need.
Incredibly bad political system did not destroy the economy.
Oh, that's a really low bar, man.
It is a very low bar, but we were worried about a lot of things a month ago, and we have come out of this without total destruction. If that is the bar that we have, it's not going to be pretty for the next couple of years, but preventing disaster is basically how we run our economy for the last 6 years, actually, and we're dealing with the consequences of that.
Lee, what about something more tangible? Is housing – I mean, pick one for me. Housing, consumer confidence,
I can give you a couple. I mean, I feel like – look, consider – think about where we've done a lot of reflection the past couple of months, about 5 years ago, and people thought we were going to go over a cliff and never come back, and that hasn't happened. We are in a recovery. It's painfully slow, but we're there. And, you know, Warren Buffett says this all the time. The economy is going in the right direction. And there are pockets when it's moving quite fast in that direction. So if you want something tangible, all you have to do is hop on a plane and go out to Silicon Valley. And it's sort of happy bubble land out there. I mean, I don't want to say bubble.
Oh, there's that bubble. There's that word. Oh, no.
It's like it's a different universe out there. And there's stuff happening. There's real companies doing real, you know, things. And there's a lot of money being thrown at it. But there's a lot of enterprise and innovation happening.
Okay, which is great. But just because we will get letters on this, I'm obliged to point out that if you stop on that flight out to Silicon Valley from New York in, say, the middle of Michigan or Nebraska someplace or parts of South Dakota, things will not be as bright, Sudeep, right?
They are not as bright. There are things improving. The housing market, even though it's not as improving as quickly as we wanted, is improving on the longer term scale, it's improving. The auto sector is slowly improving. The energy sector is still booming. All of that matters. All of that helps pull us out of the doldrums. It's just not enough. And that's the problem we've been dealing with.
Sudeep Reddy from The Wall Street Journal and Lee Gallagher from Fortune Magazine. They are in our bureau in New York. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Kai.
Thanks, Kai.
All right. We'll see you. Have a good weekend. On Wall Street today, things were up, kind of. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Starting today, the more than 47 million people in this country who rely on food stamps are going to have to get by with a little bit less. For a family of four, it's about $36 less every single month. A temporary increase in benefits that was left over from the economic stimulus back in 2009 expires today. And Marketplace's Amy Scott reports that businesses that cater to those families are going to feel that pinch, too.
Outside the Right Way Food Express in Baltimore, a big sign reads, "We accept food stamps." Manager Eric Perez estimates about 40% of the store's revenue comes from the program. He says if a family of four has $36 less to spend every month, that can add up quickly.
It's 36 by like 100 customers that came. It's going to be like $3,600.
So you just drew in pencil on your door about $3,600.
Yeah.
Small grocers aren't the only ones doing the math. Larger chains like Walmart are bracing for the change. Stacy Dean is with the nonprofit Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. She says low-income families will face even tougher choices about their spending.
Do I pay the light bill or, you know, do I buy milk for my kids? And I think that means that it won't just play out as being an impact on retailers, but any number of the other kinds of businesses that low-income families frequent.
At Patapsco Mart, another corner grocery in Baltimore, cashier Lakeisha Alston expects a big hit.
Everybody that comes in here use food stamps. All of them. Every last one of them.
Outside, 25-year-old customer Buck Williams says he and his girlfriend rely on food stamps to feed their two kids.
They taking away my kids' snacks.
Is it a big impact for your family?
I don't think so. I don't know. I need to see how it goes.
Congress is weighing even bigger cuts to the food stamp program. A version of the Farm Bill passed by the House would cut benefits by nearly $40 billion over 10 years. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
There is, of course, the Twitter initial stock offering coming next week, Thursday, I think. Today, though, the hot item traded under ticker symbol TCS, the Container Store, went public today. Shares finished up, get this, 101.11%. They basically doubled, a little more than that. So we got Marketplace's David Gura going this morning on a story about such heavy investor interest in a consumer product company like this one. Could it be a sign of strength in the economy that doesn't show up elsewhere? Here's David.
I went to the Container Store in Washington where whole walls are covered with clothes hangers.
This is the container section, presumably the heart of the Container Store.
Are blue boxes, green boxes, red boxes.
Containers that are circular and cylindrical and square and rectangular that are shaped like Legos.
Containers to hold containers, organizers of every sort.
I'm buying stuff to organize my stuff.
Melinda Green spent $25 on a shelf and some mesh bins at a different location in Arlington, Virginia.
If I didn't have as much disposable income, I would sure find other ways to find things to fit in my closet.
Stuff management is what the store is all about.
Kit Yarrow is a consumer psychologist at Golden Gate University.
And stuff management is really only top of mind for consumers when they're buying again.
Bert Flickinger is a consumer industry consultant who's studied the Container Store, and he says its success points to another way the chain reflects America's economy today. A big chunk of its business comes from workers drilling for oil and natural gas in places like Texas and North Dakota.
The people work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, so they have to use the things from the Container Store to take their personal possessions back and forth.
But Flickinger says, by his read, there's another lesson to be learned here about the American economy, one that isn't as positive.
Shoppers are still scared, so they're storing up their old clothes and the possessions that they've already purchased.
And they're refurbishing closets and kitchens instead of remodeling them. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
You got to check out the list of what you can and cannot contain with containers from the Container Store that David and our Washington Bureau put together. It is kind of awesome, and it's at marketplace.org. Mattel has rolled out a new marketing campaign just in time for the holiday shopping season. It's a Spanish language campaign, to be precise, aimed at Latina moms. The slogan is Toy Feliz, a play on Estoy Feliz, I am happy. Carmen Wong Ulrich, the new host of our weekend personal finance program, Marketplace Money, has some insights on this one. Hey, Carmen.
Hello, Kai.
So what do you think? Is this going to work? You're a Latina mom.
I was going to say, well, as a Latina mom, it's a really cute and fairly savvy play. So they definitely brought on some pretty smart people because Toy Feliz is basically Estoy Feliz, I'm happy. So it's great. But there is so much demand from retailers to get at Latina moms at this demographic because it's growing and because, you know, in California, for example, where you are, most of the children in California will be Latino in the next 10 years.
Right. But here's the thing. You are a Latina mom. Is this going to make you go shop at Mattel to buy whatever the toy is that says Toy Feliz on the front of it or the ad campaign?
Well, I'll tell you what, Kai, they already got me. Because one of their biggest launches, their hugest products, are the girls of Monster High.
Uh-huh.
They launched with someone named Skelita.
Uh-huh.
She is a Day of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos doll. And they also have a Chinese dragon doll. And they also have a doll from the Bronx. So they really get this multi-culti appeal. And Monster High has become their biggest success, I feel, because as a multi-culti Latina mom,
multi-culti,
that it really appealed to this demographic.
What took them so long? I mean, it's not like the idea that Latinos spend money is a new thing, is it?
You know what? The census numbers, that's what started it all. Because here's what I say to folks. You know what? We've always been here. Now we're just being counted. But I do have to say that it's not just appealing to Latinos. I think, you know, my daughter goes to school with and grows up around people from all backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is just how young people are going to live today.
Is it enough to do this advertising simply in the language, or is there an element of culture that needs to be understood as well?
Oh, it's absolutely cultural. You know, to me, one of the worst campaigns or some of the worst campaigns that have come out in the past couple decades are ones that simply are just in Spanish, and it's just taking an English ad and translating it. That doesn't necessarily make it Latino. So the fact that they can be savvy about something so subtle as how you say I'm happy really hints at the fact that they're going deeper here. So let's see what comes out of it.
Does the fact that this is all about dollars matter to you?
It's always about dollars, Kai. All retail is about dollars, every single piece of it. I think what it depends on is that when moms have certain budgets for buying toys, they're going to make a choice between toys. And I think what Mattel is trying to do is trying to say, this is the toy that belongs in your house because we get you. And that might work.
Carmen Wong Ulrich is the brand new host of our personal finance show, Marketplace Money. She is on the air this weekend. Carmen, thanks a bunch.
Thank you so much. Gracias, Kai.
Coming up.
When the movies work, the marketing was not the reason why. But when the movies don't work, the marketing's at fault.
Bad summer at the box office. Guess who gets the boot? But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's up 69 points today, almost 0.5%, finished at 15,615. The NASDAQ inched up 2 points, less than 0.1% there, closed at 3922. The S&P 500 gained 5 points, 0.3%. Ended things at 1761. For the week, the Dow up 0.3%. The NASDAC down, though, about 0.5%. The S&P 500 up about 0.1%. J.P. Morgan Chase disclosed the Justice Department is conducting 8 different investigations into that bank. Investors undaunted. J.P. Morgan stock up 0.1% today. The insurer AIG reported a decline in sales and a loss in its property casualty unit last quarter. Shares retreated about 6.5%. Boeing propelled the Dow as its shares took off to the tune of almost 2%. Onward, the company will soon produce more of its 737s. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.62%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
How did mortgages get us into so much trouble? And what exactly is insider trading? Marketplace senior producer Patty Hirsch explains the news of the day with a dry erase pen in our whiteboard video series. Tune in at marketplace.org/whiteboard or find us on YouTube.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Monday. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on factory orders for both August and September. On November 4th, 1952, the National Security Agency was established. And today is World Vegan Day. Don't fret, you've got 29 more days to try it. November is Vegan Month. I'm Michelle Philippi.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We take you now to San Francisco, San Francisco Bay to be specific, and Treasure Island, an old Navy base smack in the middle of the bay. Most people just drive past it on their way between Oakland and San Francisco, but it's been getting an unusual amount of attention of late because there is a barge parked right there. Not just any barge, mind you, but a barge said to be owned by Google. Google, as usual, isn't saying much about it. So as Queenie Kim reports, rumors are beginning to run wild.
I'm walking up to the pier where the infamous Google barge is docked.
I was stopped by a chain link fence topped with a razor wire. Through the fence, off in the distance, I could see the barge. It was about four stories high and half a block long and shrouded in black mesh. Pat O'Hara is a building contractor who works on the island.
This whole facility has been fenced off for about a year.
But when he asked the workers what they were doing, weirdly, they had no clue.
They would get a piece of the plan and they would build a portion, and that's all they knew that they were building.
Christina Norsick thinks she knows what's up.
This looks like a pop-up concept to me.
Norsick is the author of Pop-Up Retail. Pop-up stores open for a limited time, often to create buzz. She says Target experimented with a floating store when it launched its Isaac Mizrahi line a few years ago. And recently, retailers have been playing with shipping containers to create pop-ups.
They're combining ideas.
My sources told me Google's going to use the barge to sell Google Glass, a wearable computer that sits on your face like spectacles. Carl Howe is a retail analyst with the Yankee Group.
They're going to have to do some experimentation to figure out how to sell it.
He imagines each container offering consumers a different scenario. One might be for gamers. Another might mimic a ski slope. He says, you've heard of Disneyland?
I love the idea of Google Land.
In San Francisco, I'm Queenie Kim for Marketplace.
With winter on the way, or already arrived, depending on where you live, household budgets in colder parts of the country are being adjusted to allow for winter. Home heating oil, propane, or natural gas to keep things warm. In the Northeast, though, wood is becoming a go-to. In fact, homes in rural New England heat with wood at five times the national rate. Jack Rodolico has that story.
So we're in a factory in West Lebanon, New Hampshire, that builds wood-burning stoves. A wood stove is essentially a firebox with a chimney. You install it in your living room and keep a fire going all winter long. But the stove I'm looking at is a little different. It has 3-foot-long stainless steel antlers sticking out of the sides.
When people look at the moose, they laugh. And then they say, are you really going to do this?
Tom Morrissey is president of Woodstock Soapstone Company. Most of their stoves are made from cast iron and slabs of soapstone. But by making this one from stainless steel, they're cutting the cost almost in half. Those antlers are interchangeable with any design the customer wants.
If you're a member of the 99%, you should be able to buy something that's not just a black box.
Wood stove sales are up all over the country, but they sell best among frugal Yankees. Wood is cheaper than oil, and wood-burning technologies have become super efficient. Hartford High School in White River Junction, Vermont, gets most of its heat from burning wood chips.
Wow.
That's a lot of wood chips.
That's about 27 tons in there right now.
Byron Baraboo is the facilities director for the school district. He says the high school will burn through all 27 tons in about a week. Down in the basement, the wood furnace feeds itself chips automatically. Baraboo says wood has become about as reliable as oil.
When we first started back in the mid-90s, we dealt with individual sawmills. And if the mill closed down for Christmas, we couldn't get chips.
By burning chips all winter long, the school cuts its heating bill in half. And the technology isn't just improving for big automated systems. That Moose stove will soon be the most efficient EPA-certified stove on the market. Again, Tom Morrissey.
Well, older stoves were basically six-sided boxes that you just put wood in. Over the last several decades, they've crept up gradually through secondary combustion to catalytic converters in stoves.
These jumps in efficiency are only possible because there's so much wood in the Northeast. UMaine forestry professor Rob Lilyholm says there's more forest here today than at any point in the last 200 years.
So we see this huge return of the forest, which is really in a lot of ways, I think, unique in human history because we also saw a big increase in populations.
And these days, because there are so many trees, the Northeast can burn wood sustainably. Adam Sherman is with Biomass Energy Resource Center. Vermont, he says, is scaling up from homes to entire cities.
The city of Montpelier is laying a grid of hot water delivery systems to the downtown, tying off of a wood chip heating plant. And so that's a very innovative project that we'll see more of.
And whether you're saving money or not, sometimes it's nice to come home to a warm fire. In West Lebanon, New Hampshire, I'm Jack Rodolico for Marketplace.
You're not going to see their names on the credits when you go to a movie. They don't amount to much on the red carpet, really. But arguably, marketing executives are some of the most important people in Hollywood because nobody's going to go see a movie they don't know about, right? That said, when things don't go well, box office-wise, somebody's got to take the fall, and increasingly, it's the gang in marketing. Sharon Waxman is the editor-in-chief of the entertainment news site The Wrap. Hey, Sharon.
Hey, Kai.
So you can't sell movies without marketing in it, and yet all these studios are letting their marketing chiefs go. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's raining marketing chiefs in Hollywood for some reason. Sony did a clean sweep. Relativity did a change. DreamWorks Animation changed their marketing person. Universal booted their chairman who came out of marketing. So there's a little bit of a sense of big changes going on in that sector. To me, that says that there's a certain amount of dysfunction and nervousness in general in the studios. When you change your marketing, that means that your movies aren't working.
Yeah, but it's not the marketing guys who are green lighting the movies, right? Shouldn't the studio chiefs?
Don't say that so loud.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
Someone
I
might
know,
hear you.
I know. But the point is valid, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. When the movies work, the marketing was not the reason why. But when the movies don't work, the marketing's at fault. You hear that from marketing people, by the way, all the time. And that's true. In other words, if you want to make a visible change and show shareholders that you hear them or that you realize that there's an issue and you're reacting to it, the most visible way to have that shift is to change your marketing. The truth is that a lot of the movies have been working. And the marketing executives who've been ousted are extremely respected veteran executives. So the question is, what are the studios really trying to accomplish? Are they moving into some new era of digital marketing, really changing the way they're presenting their movies to the public using Twitter and Facebook and social? Or is it more a game of musical chairs?
How bad do they have to be to get canned? Is it one major blockbuster gone under will sink you? Like I'm thinking Sony just reported the other day that it lost $200 million on White House Down. Does that lose you
Sony had a very tough summer, but there is something going on across the business. And I think what's going on is when you have the studios relying on big tentpole movies, which they are more than ever, rather than a broader array of movies, when one fails, they really feel it.
So here comes another heretical thought. In this age of Facebook and Twitter and instantaneous reviews and everybody knowing everything almost before it happens, how important is marketing anyway?
Marketing is hugely important. Marketing overseas is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Marketing domestically is huge. And all of those things that you just mentioned, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram,
yeah.
Pinterest, those are all parts of the marketing campaign. And when you see movies, for example, getting greenlit today, part of the conversation may be the number of Twitter followers any particular actor or director may have.
I need to up my Twitter followers. That's clearly what that means.
Well, because you're not going to get cast in the next story if you don't, Kai.
That's right. Sharon Waxman, she is the founder and senior editor of The Wrap. Sharon, thanks a bunch.
Thanks, Kai.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today brought to us by a forthcoming study in the journal Media Psychology, confirming something that honestly has been clear for a while now. 3D movies just ain't all that, gang. Audiences, the researchers found, are no more satisfied after watching a 3D movie than they are after watching the same movie in a mere two dimensions. There are, of course, all sorts of subtle psychological factors they looked at. Permit me, though, to add two more tangible items. Number one, $17 per 3D ticket, my friend. Also, number two, those glasses, just really uncomfortable. All right, that is all. That's Marketplace from APM on this Friday. Today, the Dow up 69 points, almost 0.5%. The NASDAQ up 2 points, just a fraction percentage-wise. The S&P 500 gained 5 points, 0.3%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace was developed by J.J. Yor. The program is produced by Sitara Nieves. Deborah Clark is the vice president and executive producer. I'm Kai Rizdal. We'll see you on Monday. Let's do it on Monday. This is APM.